From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest, composer John Frizzell, I think has a really unique way of scoring films. If you look at the wide and varied range of films, from Alien Resurrection to one of my favorites, The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio, to the score for his new film, horror film, The Reaping, he has a way of finding the emotional high notes and making these play as sub-themes throughout the scores. Another of my favorite of your scores, of course, is James Dean. First of all, John, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
One of the things I love so much about that James Dean score, we can start with that, it's a television movie directed by Mark Rydell, is that it really is sort of about loneliness, that score, isn't it?
Yeah. Mark knew Dean and talked to me at great length about his real inner workings of his mind and about what he perceived him as feeling and what the film was really about. And we came up with this trumpet that would sort of be what he felt like. And it was really a lot about the music that he might have listened to in the time, and a lot about bop and a lot about jazz.
It really sort of feeling is sort of like a harder version to me of Chet Baker in that trumpet note.
Certainly there's a parallel to the lives and to I think the anguish that you see in those two amazing artists.
But just a real sort of sense of melancholy in that score. Yet in Defiance, Ohio, it's a very different kind of score, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean that's kind of relentless optimism. Just sort of this sort of I'm you know, devil may care. You know, life can beat you down, it'll beat you down again, it'll beat you down again, and you just get up and you say a nice happy thing and you go and you take care of your kids, and that's what that film's about.
Yeah, for the people who didn't see that movie, tell them a little bit what the prize winner of Defiance, Ohio is about.
It's a film about a woman who had 10 kids. It's a true story. And she had a husband who wasn't exactly pulling his weight around the house and drank a lot. And she started entering contests, which were to write jingles. And a jingle in this context means more like a little poem, say for Wrigley's Gum or Samsonite Luggage. And she got very good at it. And she would win way beyond what most people win because they were skill-based, these contests. It wasn't just sort of a lottery. And it's about how she persevered in her life and how she took care of her family and managed to really excel and to produce these wonderful kids. And her daughter, Tuff, went on to write the book about her life. And it's a wonderful film that Jane Anderson directed and Julianne Moore stars in.
I met you. We talked about that at the Ohio Film Festival a couple of years ago. And that score is interesting because you've got to deal with this movie that sort of strikes this chord between optimism and obsession, which are both sort of notes that you strike in the score.
Yeah, it's just sort of frenetic energy and not leaving out and not dismissing the pain that she really went through, the really tough stuff that she went through with, you know, being threatened with not having a home for her kids and the things that she endured.
But I would say that kind of determination or fixing towards a goal is oftentimes a sort of something in a lot of the things that you've done. A lot of these movies kind of have that in common. I just wonder if it ends up being something that –
except Office Space, which was the goal to do nothing.
But it's also something – but that's a goal too.
That's a goal in and of itself.
And that score really has this almost kind of lighter-than-air feel to it.
That was the idea of that score, was what is the epitome of laziness? What does it sound like?
Oftentimes, and we've had directors even come in and talk about that, they'll come in and talk about a temp track, which is songs and pieces of music they pull together as the movie's being edited. And – I guess at some point you've got to talk some of these directors out of their attachment to these temp scores, which obviously sometimes they've got to strike notes that are just too obvious.
I mean, the main thing is to try to work in an environment where temp is serving a positive purpose. And sometimes that purpose can be to go past that place where we can use words or where you have the knowledge to use words to describe what type of tone you want in the music. And in that sense, it can be very effective. Often, if there's a piece of temp music that someone is very attached to, I might ask my music editor to maybe re-temp it in another way, which is very different that the director likes. And then you kind of break that hold, that creative hold on, so why is, you know, that music is the right piece, that maybe it was an aspect of the orchestration or the tempo or something about it. And to try to pull out that emotional idea. But the best way to really work on a film is to go in with no temp. And that's what I've done most of the time, and gone in there and be able to just write a score.
It's The Treatment. My guest is composer John Frizzell. He scored a number of movies. We're talking about some of them, Office Space, a really great score for the prize winner, Defiance, Ohio. My favorite of his scores, unfortunately, is the James Dean. Not unfortunately, but it's a great, really wonderful score. He's also scored this new Hilary Swank movie coming up, a horror film called The Reaping, which we'll get into. But you've said that more often than not, you don't have to deal with temp track, which must be really liberating for you.
Well, and maybe I should phrase that sometimes there is a temp track, and I'll say, look, let's just let go of the temp track for a few weeks. We can come back to it, and let me just go exploring. And that usually puts people at ease and say, hey, you know, that's cool. We can get back to the temp if it really works. And then usually we end up just going down a path based on what happens in that period of time. And also I try to create synthesizer mock-ups that can be used in the Avid, that can be used in the previews that sound good enough, which is a lot of sort of extra work.
Which is sort of, in effect, creating another score while you're working on the real score, isn't it?
It is. It's a lot of work to get the synths to sound usable. I love the technology, and so I have fun doing that part. And then you really do have a temp score, which is later going to become the score.
Well, from Mark Rydell to Jane Anderson to Mike Judge, these are very different people. Mike, in fact, is a musician himself.
Yeah.
What were discussions with him like for Office Space?
Well, Office Space was a challenging film in that when Mike and I would watch the film, there was no scene that had to have music, yet the film needed music.
What do you mean?
Well, we'd sit there and we'd go, oh, this scene doesn't need music, this one doesn't need music, this one doesn't need music. And we get to the end of the film and go, well, wait a minute, but the film needs music. And so we almost had to, say, work on a scene and maybe do something to it that didn't love completely within the scene that helped the overall film. And so spotting the film, deciding where the music went, was really complicated. We went back and forth on it just over and over and over. But there's about, I think, 35 minutes of score in there. There's quite a bit of score. And I guess in the end it seems to have been a success. So
it's interesting, too, because a lot of the films that you've worked on have been films that are actually kind of minimal in terms of the directing technique. They're really about these emotional stories. Even in the case of Office Space, as much as anything else, it's not so much about traditional A, B, C, beginning, middle, to end thing, as much as it's just sort of trying to follow this emotional trajectory of the character. Is that an easier or a tougher thing to try to bring across in the score?
I think it is more challenging. I think you have to really stick with the characters. And maybe it's the process that I'm using that it doesn't feel that much friction in that. You know, that by really avoiding temp, thinking of the film as a whole, right, thinking of this structure within it. As I said to you, I think earlier, I like to start to map out almost like little diagrams of the
film. When did you start doing mapping them out? How early in your career?
You know, Prize Winner was one of the first times I actually drew something on a piece of paper.
So just recently?
Yeah, in the last couple years. And moving away from scene to scene scoring, and maybe I kind of was doing it in my mind, sort of mapping it out, but now I'm getting much more sort of ritualistic or possibly obsessive about it. The process tends to be now to sit down, watch the film a couple times with no music, maybe three times in a row in one day, just a big day of watching, and then go to the piano for maybe 4 or 5 days and just don't watch the film at all and just play, get a bunch of these sort of half-baked ideas out. And sometimes I'll just record them with GarageBand. And then I'll just start lining them up with the film and seeing, you know, where they sit. Maybe I'll have 10 little ideas and they're very rough, and starting to see this framework and starting to get a skeleton of the overall shape of the film. You know, really not thinking of just a scene at a time, but really thinking of the pivotal moments in the film.
It's The Treatment. My guest is composer John Frizzell. He's scored a number of movies. One of the newer films you worked on is The Reaping, which is both a big studio film and a horror film. And I've not seen it yet, but it's a religious horror film, I'm guessing, kind of in the Omen tradition, right?
I guess it is, since it's about religion and it's a horror film. I mean, yeah, I guess there is. But it's got a lot of different things in it. The Reaping is about a miracle debunker who's undergone a horrific loss in her life.
And she says she's played by Hilary Swank.
Yeah. And she gets called to a small town in Louisiana where there's a series of events which seem to be paralleling events in the Bible. And she cannot – she keeps trying to find a rational explanation for them. She keeps using reason. But eventually what she sees is that it's just beyond that.
But does that become something you use to kind of liturgical things or pieces of music that have that kind of religious overtone to them?
Sure. Gregorian chant. And you have to go back to so much. I sang in a boys' choir as a kid at the National Cathedral. And so I was around this music a lot. You know, I think the sound of a cathedral, the wonderful echo, the incredible tail that the sound has on it. It's just sort of part of my thinking.
But that sense of dread, even hearing that kind of thing in the cathedral, that sense of awe, I guess I should say, that sound and that ambience and that echo creates was, I'm wondering if that's something you wanted to use on this score too.
Definitely. I mean, you want that sense of this sort of this power. But much of the score stays very thin and small and kind of defiant against what's going to happen until later when it really just sort of erupts into this massive thing.
Doing something like that, because those scores are often either parodistic or melodramatic or both, how do you sort of set about making it something you can put your signature on, but at the same time delivering some of those things that have to be delivered in the score for those kinds of films?
Well, fear is quite a subject to deal with. Unlike a lot of emotions that you'll find in, say, a film like The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio, fear is something I think we share with a lot of other creatures. You know, you can watch a mouse become afraid. You can watch an elephant become afraid. And so it's a maybe a more visceral or more primal experience. So how do you get someone to really be afraid? Well, I think it's really about creating an environment where they're at ease and then pulling that into a place where they didn't go, sort of leading them down the wrong path.
And what instruments often give you the idea or give you the idea of helping to work those emotions out?
Well, certainly dissonance can do it. Certainly, you know, relying on a lot of the 20th century techniques from a lot of the Eastern European composers of aleatoric writing where we might write, you know, all the strings would be the essence of some. I've seen my cat walk across the piano before and you end up getting a whole bunch of notes played at once. So we use these clusters of notes. We use techniques in the strings, say playing behind the bridge on the violin or playing with the back of the bow. There's a lot of different types of techniques which are almost on the line of noise, which are important ideas in it. And sometimes it can be harmonic ideas of introducing a note which is very dissonant within a chord, leading a progression to an unexpected place, or a melodic idea that's unexpected.
It's those things you're talking about, taking instrumentation that we're familiar with and we're aware of and even some sort of melodies and then just doing that one thing in that sort of lets us know that something is off key here, if you pardon that expression.
Yeah, and one of my favorite ideas in it is actually metrically setting you up for a loop is writing something in 7/8, which is, you know, having seven beats in a measure as opposed to eight. And it kind of feels like it should be a normal eight or four.
Because you're listening for the eighth that never really comes
never
so subconsciously. It's doing something to us, isn't it?
Exactly. You're never getting your footing. You're never getting you kind of feel like, well, this is making sense, but in the back of your mind going, this isn't quite making sense.
It's interesting because I guess I end up thinking about what Hitchcock said to Bernard Herrmann, who he thought could compose that score, those kinds of scores that sort of built expectations up one time too many and he couldn't use them anymore. And is there a fear for you of just sort of dealing with those conventions at the same time, also wanting, again, to sort of put your own stamp on it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the hardest thing, because fear is a very sort of primal and almost simple thing, is how do you be unique with it? In the case of The Reaping, I relied on a lot more on melody than I've ever done in a fearful film, and I used piano. And I tried to create melodies that were maybe haunting or pulled you in, and they kind of set you at ease, and I'm kind of setting you up, I guess.
How many times did it take you in watching the film before you decided on that course of action with it?
I think that I didn't really – I try not to get that involved with my brain to say here's my course of action. I try to just sort of get out of my way, watch the film, really let it get embedded in me.
In the way that a horror movie audience probably would too, right?
Yeah. And then I make a commitment to not just scare people but to sit down and scar them mentally, you know. You know, I don't want someone being uncomfortable. I want them waking up in the middle of the night and being really kind of messed up from it. I mean, that's what I like from a horror film. That's what the first Alien did to me. You know, I think, what was I, 12 when I went to see it? And I just was a mess for probably a couple months.
And when did you connect it to the score? At what point did you think it was the music as much as anything else that was doing that? Because that's a fairly minimal score in Alien too.
Yeah. Well, I did the fourth Alien film. But yeah, in the first Alien, it's very light, you know. I don't know when I first connected. Let me think. What was the first score where I really, really understood that it was the music that was doing it to me? I probably Jacob's Ladder was one that really influenced me a lot, where I really felt so much fear and so much confusion and so much dread from that film. I actually watched it in the theater twice in one day, and then I came back the next day and watched it again right when it came out. It's one of my favorite films of all time.
Well, we'll take a break. By the way, if you want to direct those class actions, so send them to John Frizzell, because he's the one who's messing you up. He scored The Reaping in a number of other films. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. More after this.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. My guest is composer John Frizzell. His newest score for a film is The Reaping, but he's done the prize winner Defiance, Ohio, Aliens Resurrection. Let's talk about that for a moment, because that's a film that it's a big studio job. There are expectations people have about it, but it's also a film that has a real sense of heartbreak to it. There's kind of a spiraling down in that film, too, isn't there? Kind of a death of heroism in it.
And a lot about motherhood and a lot about it's an erotic film. Jean-Pierre Genet and I spoke a lot about the eroticism and the sexuality that's projected in the film. There's a lot of things going on in there.
What did he talk to you about, Genet, about wanting to do? Because his other films were actually really kind of busy, and this is one that has a real straightforward storyline. I mean, you basically got to follow it from beginning to end. We've already got an emotional investment in Ripley by this point. Mm-hmm. What was it that he talked to you about, and what did you want to do with that movie?
So much of what we talked about was reactions of our bodies, because my French is so bad, and Jean-Pierre's English has come a long way since then. But we would just get into these sort of series of body movements if we liked something, or you know, sometimes we had an interpreter with us that would help us get through if we needed to really get into a conversation. But often it was really just expressions, you know, liked something, didn't like it. And I spent 6 months writing that score and just went through a series of trying things. But one of the first things I tried was the recovery room, which is in probably about 12, 15 minutes into the film, where she's been through the surgery and she's in post-op, and that strange overhead spiraling view of her lying in that cocoon-like web. And that was the first scene I worked on. And that stayed almost unchanged and became a major theme in the film.
There are a lot of overhead shots in that movie, though. I'm thinking about, as you talk about, there are a lot of those. And the score falls a lot between sort of these moments of sort of creating that sense of dread that you're talking about, but also it's a really kind of poetic moments too.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if those contrasts were something that were conscious for you, or if they came to you as you were setting out and writing the score for the picture.
They sort of came to me as I was going. I mean, again, it's such a mammoth amount of music. I think there's 95 minutes of music in there. It really doesn't ever stop. It really pushed me as early in my career. I wrote that 10 years ago, and that pushed me right to the limit of what I was doing at the time. And I was pushing the technology to the limit and everything. There was a lot of sleepless nights on that project. And I know a lot more about filmmaking now. I'm much more in touch with what the editor is doing.
How much of a partnership do you get now with the directors? I mean, how early do you get to come in the case of these movies? Well, for The Reaping, for example, when did you come in?
I came in very late.
Okay.
They had a complete cut of the film, and I came in and met with Stephen Hopkins and Joel Silver and then just started writing. Sometimes I think that by going in with a short schedule where you just have to just go, 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 and there's no questioning yourself, there's a lot to be said for that. It's really kind of nice. You just go in and it's like an Olympic event. It's an endurance test. You're getting up every day. I start writing at 4:30 or 5 in the morning. And it's a long time sitting in a chair just totally focused, and your brain just gets completely fried from writing 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes of music a day. And I think that you just go so far into it that you just kind of lose any of your editorial mind, and you just completely get into this dark room with this picture, and it just seems like it's reality after a while. It gets pretty weird.
It's The Treatment. My guest is composer John Frizzell. We're talking about a number of the scores he's done. He's done Alien Resurrection, Office Space, recently The Reaping. I want to talk to you a bit about Ryuichi Sakamoto, whom you worked with early. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, that was a great experience. Early on in my career, I was suddenly an opportunity came up for me to work with Ryuichi on a miniseries called Wild Palms.
The Oliver Stone miniseries.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a lot of music to do, 6 hours.
And, you know, and I was working as a synthesist and an orchestrator for him. And so, you know, taking his handwritten sketches and flushing them out with the synthesizers. And I was quite intimidated because of his, you know, he's so famous for being a synthesist at the time. And I guess I had a few things that I had figured out through need. I was primarily doing TV commercials before that.
Huh.
And it was a great experience, you know. And it's when I really fell in love with working with long form.
But he really, in a lot of those things that he'd done, even the non-film scores, which quite a few of those records were non-film scores, used synthesizers to communicate the weight of strings, didn't
they? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they were using it to – they were, in a way – I'm not saying replacing the strings, but there was these wonderful warm analog sounds, you know, these really big, you know, multiple oscillators that are slightly detuned. And, you know, so much of our – we try to emulate that now with computers and these big sort of Oberheim, big fat synths, you know. And so it's a wonderful sound. And, you know, it's – I don't know if we'll see if it comes back. It maybe sounds a little old right now. But I have a big fondness for those old analog days.
Well, let me ask you, too, because I guess for The Reaping, you were saying you were working on the big sound stage at Warner's and working with an orchestra, I guess. Mm-hmm. And what was that experience like to get to do something like that? Well, you're not – it's the polar opposite, the 180 of working with those big, fat imitations of analog from synthesizers.
Well, there's on The Reaping, there's quite a bit of electronics. And I think that's one thing that makes a score like The Reaping technically my favorite thing to do because it's very complicated. You have a choir. You have an orchestra, and you have the electronics. And the electronics can be very finicky. In other words, they can quite quickly make the orchestra seem small, right? They can sort of wipe it out. Or the other way around is they can just sort of not hold up against the orchestra. And it's taken me – it's something I'm constantly working with is to find a way for them both to be big, to create a massive sense of music and effect – of balancing the world of electronics. And one of the things I'm doing a lot now is finding a line in between the acoustic and the electronics where I might record some of the orchestra and then manipulate it in the computer to make it almost like a synthesizer. Or sometimes I use guitar amp simulators and also chopping up the digital audio and using a lot of delays and things with the actual orchestral recordings and then blending that and coming right back to the orchestra so that your ear is with the orchestra. And then at some point, maybe when you weren't noticing it, what was organic became synthetic. And then it turned back in. And it's one way that, especially when we're dealing with things like fear and confusing the audience and losing your footing, it's another technique of getting in under your skin.
Well, unlike the minimalism of some of the other films we talked about, Stephen Hopkins is a really incredibly technically proficient director who knows all the tricks of filmmaking and can use them quite ruthlessly. Did you feel like you were a real teammate with him in terms of doing those kinds of things?
Yeah, we had what I loved about working with Steven is he let me just write a pass on the film, write my first draft. And then he came in and he directed me perhaps the way he might direct an actor through the emotional beats. And I just remember saying, ah, a lot, you know, when Stephen would sort of say, you know, well, now we get to this moment and now she's decided this in her mind. And then when I really saw that and I see that as the pivotal moment, that's where working with a director on a film score is really fun because they've got this vision. They've got this sense of what's going on in each character's mind at any given time. And when they can really convey that to me and then I can start to express that, it's a joy. You sit in the room and all of a sudden – what they've worked for so long to create is starting to come to life.
Because what you've got to do with a score, and I think you do so often, is use your own scores to create an emotional story that sometimes goes, if you pardon the expression, in concert with the film, but often it sort of is kind of a contrast too.
Absolutely. Is pulling in a completely another direction it can be the perfect thing to score the emotion of the scene, or it can be completely redundant and boring, where quite often the really great film scores really come out by playing against what's happening. I mean, if I had to pick the greatest film score of all time, I'm going to say To Kill a Mockingbird.
Because
of the beauty and the hope in the melody and the incredible tension of the film and what Elmer Bernstein played against and how he right off the bat just introduces you to everything, right, with the opening credits.
It's The Treatment, I guess, as composed to John Frizzell. We're talking about his entire career. His latest film score is The Reaping. I know that Joe Pass was kind of a mentor to you, and the way he used air and space in the way that he played in those songs, that incredible technique of his. How often is that something you get to do, to sort of really like let the notes resonate? Because what you're talking about in a lot of these horror scores is sometimes that kind of spareness that leaves those things, the music sticking in your head as much as anything else. How much of Joe Pass is still with you?
Well, he had a huge influence on my life. When I was about 14, I was playing rock guitar and I bought an album for Django. And literally like 10 seconds into this record, I knew that my life was just all about music. And I studied Joe's music for the next 4 years really intensely. And I transcribed most of the album Virtuoso 1, which is the
record.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
It was definitely a weird thing to do. And then I went up to him in the Blue Note. I was 18. And I said, look, I transcribed this and I want a lesson. And he kind of gruffly said, I don't teach. And I don't know what that is. I can't read that, he said. And I said, no, come on. I mean, I did a lot of work here. Can I have a lesson? And I just kept bugging him. And finally he said, it's $100, which I didn't have. But I borrowed a friend's car and I went out. He was staying at the Marriott out by LaGuardia Airport. I was living in New York at the time. And he spent 8 hours with me teaching me that day. And at the end, he wouldn't take my money. He had me change his strings.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, what is there a score for you think that really shows the influence of Joe Bass?
Well, what really happened in that lesson is that I started playing, I think I was playing Autumn Leaves for Joe. And he said, do you know the words? And I said, no. And he yelled at me. And he said, play the melody straight. And I didn't know the melody correctly. And he just got all over my case about that, about the melody. And he said, you know, when you learn a standard, you've got to know the melody because that's what was written. And you can't improvise until you know the words, what the song's about, until you really understand the melody and the relationship with the harmony. And so I kind of went back to the drawing board at that point as a musician and restructured my whole self. And I came out of what he taught me that day as a composer because I began to look at music with such a critical eye. And that's the biggest thing he did in my life.
I just think about the way he used pace. I mean, the way he used rhythm because he had that incredible speed that he's capable of. But also there'd be these big airy passages too.
Yeah.
And that's what I kind of hear in your stuff, the way you kind of let the scores take some time and some room.
And I think a lot of that influence, too, comes from my years working with James Newton Howard, who was very, very important to how I score films and what I learned about film scoring. My first, I don't know, 10 scores I wrote, James would, really listen closely. And he wrote the theme to Dante's Peak, which I then scored. And the critiques that I would get from James really taught me an enormous amount.
Well, we're out of time. My guest is John Frizzell. He scored a number of films, great ones, great scores like The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio. His newest score is The Reaping. John, thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks so much.
Our technical director is Mario Diaz. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.